Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 25th, 2024. It has been 3,741 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 65 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 62 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. United States military aid to Ukraine will start to arrive by the end of the week, and enough aid to have a material impact on stabilizing Ukrainian ground and air defenses will be in the theater of war within 3 to 5 weeks. 2. We maintain that Russian forces will intensify their ground attacks and airstrikes to maximize damage and attrition before significant aid from the US, the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative, Belgium, the European Union, and the United Kingdom arrive in Ukraine. 3. The Russian breach of Ukrainian defensive lines in Ocheretene has created a critical situation, threatening to collapse the Ukrainian defensive lines at the Durna River in the Avdiivka area of operation. 4. Ukrainian forces continue to have insufficient ammunition resources, particularly short-range air defense systems, which enable the holding of existing defensive lines and protect the civilian population. 5. The world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox, with renewed nuclear threats by Kremlin leadership and Polish leadership openly discussing forward deploying United States nuclear weapons. 6. Russian forces have an operational goal to capture Chasiv Yar by May the 9th, regardless of cost. 7. In our assessment, Russia is setting conditions for a wider attack in the direction of Vuhledar, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. And Moscow is under increasing pressure due to the imminent increase in military aid to Ukraine. 8. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 9. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February the 24th, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 10. The attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine. And the situation is more serious, especially at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. Yesterday, Russian attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure were limited. In Kharkiv, digital TV broadcasts were re-established after Russia destroyed the main TV tower in the city. Russia attacked the settlement of Dobropille in Donetsk Oblast, targeting the House of Culture and wounding 2 people. The April the 24th missile attack on Odessa targeted a storage yard for disabled vehicles, more commonly known as a junkyard. We had previously reported 1 person was injured. Russian forces shelled 8 villages and settlements in Free Kherson Oblast and the cities of Berislav and Kherson. 3 people were wounded in the attacks.
Here
Here is today's action report. We start in Kharkiv Oblast in the Svatova Area of Operation, or AO, where Russian forces continued probing Ukrainian defenses east of Berestove and did not make any new advances. In Luhansk Oblast, the Russian Ministry of Defense, or ARMAD, reported that Ukrainian forces were on the offensive in the area of Novovodene. Fighting continued in the Kremennaya AO, where Russian forces continued their attempts to advance in the direction of Terny and Torske without success. The failed attack on Torske was between the village and Dibrova, with advancing Russian units never reaching the line of conflict. In the Siversky AO of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued their attacks southeast of Bilohorivka, with no change in the situation. Moving to the Donbas, in northeastern Donetsk Oblast, fighting continued in the Siversky AO of Donetsk Oblast, where mutual fighting restarted southeast of Vyimka, with no change in the situation. In the Kostyantynivka AO, the Russian offensive on Chasiv Yar has stalled, with Ukrainian forces making marginal gains northeast, east, and southeast of the settlement. Russian mercenary Melblogovo Gonzo reported the, quote, Russian Federation armed forces are trying to improve their positions in the part of Bohdanivka, providing additional confirmation that Ukrainian troops were able to advance to the edge of the village. Fighting continued on the eastern edge of the Novy micro-district of Chasiv Yar, with no change in the situation. Russian attempts to regain recently lost positions in Ivanivske and northwest of Klishchiivka failed. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continue to flank Ukrainian defensive positions at the Durna River and have crossed the natural barrier in several locations, partially aided by unseasonably dry weather. In the Avdiivka AO, fighting continued in the southeastern tip of Novokolonovo, with no significant changes. Russian troops still control 50-60% of Ocheretene, making a small westward advance toward Progress. The Ukrainian 100th Mechanized Infantry Brigade was activated to reinforce the defensive lines. Last week's failure of the 115th Brigade was largely due to the unit commanders and not individual soldiers. Errors were made during the rotation, and the Ukrainian source Deep State implied that the breach at Ocheretene was initially covered up. The armed forces of Ukraine continue to transition to a NATO-style military, but there are still many senior officers who adhere to Soviet-era military doctrine. The situation remains very critical, and we are pessimistic that Ukrainian forces can contain the breach. To the south, the situation is worse, with Russian forces capturing the village of Novobakhmutivka and advancing to the eastern outskirts of Solovyovo. This is the second breach on the north flank of the Durna line. Fighting continued in Berdychi, and Russian troops crossed the Durna River for the third time into Semenivka, where fighting was ongoing. The situation was better on the southern part of the Durna River line, with fighting continuing near Umanske, Yasnobrodivka, and Netailovo. White House National Security Council advisor Jake Sullivan admitted that the delayed United States military aid contributed to the loss of Avdiivka in February. Quote, "The consequences of the delay were felt in Ukraine. Over the past 6 months, Ukraine was forced to save ammunition, and this led to the loss of part of the territory in the east, in particular Avdiivka." Unquote. Because Ukrainian resources remain restricted, field commanders cannot afford to make a single mistake, and the command and control issues on the north flank of the Durna River line may end up being extremely costly. In occupied Panteleimonivka, a Russian command and control base by the railroad station was destroyed by an unknown weapon, likely a JDAM-ER glide bomb or French AASM hammer. An adjacent electrical substation was also destroyed. In the Vuhledar AO, Russian forces shelled Ukrainian positions in Krasnohorivka before launching a significant offensive, making incremental gains in the area of the railroad station. Fighting was ongoing, with Ukrainian forces defending the Krasnohorivka refractory plant. Positional fighting continued east of Georgievka. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine reported fighting continued on the edges of Novomikhailivka, while War Gonzo reported fighting on the approaches of Paraskovivka. We maintain our early assessment that Ukrainian forces have withdrawn from Novomikhailivka, but Russian forces have not been able to establish military control. Positional fighting continued in the Staromlinivka AO, with Russian forces launching squad-sized assaults south and east of Urozhaine and southwest of Staromayorske. Multiple explosions were reported in the area of occupied Mariupol. After the blasts, partisans recorded multiple troop movements and ammunition being relocated in the city. The Crimean Tatar insurgent group Atesh reported that some ammunition depots had been located by residential buildings, hospitals, and schools. In the Orikhiv AO of Zaporizhia Oblast, there was only light fighting in the no-man's land out of Robotyne. In the Kherson AO, Russian forces launched a single attack on Ukrainian positions in Krynke, lost positions in the western part of the village, and retreated in the direction of Kozachi Lahiri. Based on new information, we adjusted the map, moving the line of conflict to within 4 kilometers of Kozachi Lahiri. Here is my theater-wide update. Russia is actively targeting construction crews building Ukrainian defensive lines, attacking military and civilian workers, and destroying equipment. Ukraine will be increasing the ranks of the State Border Service to 75,000 officers, authorizing the hiring of 15,000. The United States confirmed that in March, longer-range ATACMS missiles were transferred to Ukraine. The new rockets have a published 300-kilometer range and were used to strike the Russian military airfield in occupied Crimea on April 17. Ukraine can now strike Russian targets almost anywhere in the occupied territories, including the Kerch Bridge. In our assessment, using ATACMS to target the bridge would be a waste of a finite resource and would only provide a psychological victory. Striking bridges and border crossings into Ukraine and destroying the Chonhar Bridge from occupied Crimea to Kherson Oblast would have a larger impact. It's worth noting that this was another Moscow red line that included nuclear threats, which the Kremlin ultimately ignored. Nope, no nuclear war. The Chancellor of Germany Olaf Scholz said that he would not change his opinion on providing Taurus cruise missiles to Ukraine. The Taurus would be much more effective in an attempt to permanently disable the Kerch Bridge versus Storm Shadow, Scalp-E and ATACMS. Ukraine and Portugal confirmed they were working on creating a bilateral security agreement. No timeline for completion was announced. 3 hours after US President Joe Biden signed Senate Resolution 815 into law, providing $61 billion in financial and military aid to Ukraine, the Department of Defense announced it was providing a $1 billion military aid package, which includes missiles for air defense, Stinger man-portable air defense systems, small arms ammunition, 155 and 105mm artillery rounds, 60mm mortar shells, Bradley infantry fighting vehicles, high-mobility multipurpose wheeled vehicles, better known as HAMAS, mine-resistant ambush protection vehicles, logistics vehicles, tactical vehicles for towing and transporting equipment, tube-launched wire-guided anti-tank missiles, Javelin and ATV-4 anti-tank ammunition, also known as ATGM, airfield auxiliary equipment, Ottawa-compliant Claymore anti-personnel mines, Ottawa-compliant landmines, explosives for obstacle clearing, night vision equipment, and spare parts, field equipment, training ammunition, maintenance equipment, and other support. The language in the press release by the Department of Defense suggested that Ukraine will receive at least 15 Bradley IFVs, 500 MRAPs, 1,000 HAMAS, 200 tactical vehicles for moving equipment, and 12 vehicles for logistical support. Washington said the first tranche after restarting aid would address Ukraine's most urgent needs. While on the surface the lack of heavy weapons may be disappointing, artillery and mortar ammunition, anti-tank weapons, mines, air defense systems and ammunition, and battle taxes are the critical immediate needs. The European Union transferred $1.6 billion in macrofinance support to Ukraine. This is the next payment from the four-year package, which will provide $53.6 billion in aid to Ukraine. The foreign minister of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, reported that Germany had transferred a third Patriot air defense system. Two additional batteries are close to being delivered, with three more under negotiation. The United Kingdom military aid package announced yesterday will include Paveway 4 satellite-guided precision bombs. The bomb is designed to penetrate earth and concrete before exploding and carries a 230-kilogram warhead. It has GPS and inertial guidance and is compatible with a number of aircraft, including the F-16. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.